Well, thank you, everyone, for tuning into our program today. You may know that Family Talk is a listener-supported program, and we remain on the air by your generosity, literally. If you can help us financially, we would certainly appreciate it. God's blessings to you all.
That's right, Dr. Dobson. And friend, thanks to generous listeners like you, Family Talk can reach more and more listeners with practical help and encouragement. To support Family Talk with your best gift, go online to drjamesdobson.org or call 877-732-6825.
Hi, this is Johnny Erickson Tata, and you're listening to Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.
Well, hello, everyone. This is James Dobson, and you're listening to Family Talk. And I'm especially delighted that you've joined us today because you're going to hear a very meaningful interview. Let me introduce it this way. Dr. Tim Clinton is the president of the American Association of Christian Counselors, and he has recently agreed to join our team here at Family Talk. And you'll hear more about this, but we're delighted about it because I have a great love for this man that I've known for many, many years. I have respect for him, and you're going to hear more about him in the days to come. But I sent him on an assignment for one of his early responsibilities here at Family Talk. I asked him to attend Johnny Erickson Tata's 50th anniversary in a wheelchair. I guess you can call it a celebration. The Lord has certainly been with her and used her. But since she was injured in an accident, a diving accident when she was 17 years of age, she has been paralyzed from the shoulders down. And what she's been through is not possible to describe. But instead of complaining about it, she has reached out to disabled people everywhere through her ministry called Johnny and Friends. And she has been an encouragement to millions. She's written more than 50 books. And I think you already know her story. But I asked him to talk to her about a specific subject. It's on this recording, and I think you're going to be moved by what you hear today. Here is Dr. Tim Clinton and Johnny Erickson Tata talking about a subject that is highly relevant to today.
Hi, everyone. This is Dr. Tim Clinton, president of the American Association of Christian Counselors, sitting in for Dr. Dobson today here on Family Talk. I'm honored also to be with a true champion of the faith. Her name, you know her well, Johnny Erickson Tata. And today we're going to be discussing an updated version of her popular book. It's entitled, When Is It Right to Die? It's a difficult, I think somewhat controversial, but really necessary conversation that we need to have. I can't think of anybody better on this subject than Johnny. Hey, Johnny, thanks for joining us.
Absolutely, Tim. And thanks to the listeners at Family Talk for tuning in today. Again, on a difficult subject, but one that's kind of a hot button issue around the country.
Oh, it's
right
hot.
Now.
You bet. Absolutely. Yeah. You just celebrated 50 years of ministry of, I guess they say, too, also being in a wheelchair.
Yeah, right. How do you celebrate 50 years in a wheelchair? I don't know, but you do if you're me, because God's grace has been absolutely awesome, Tim.
And from all over the country, around the world, people shared their perspective on you and what you meant to each and every one of them. We have here a special word from Dr. Dobson, and I want to take the audio of that and play it for our listeners. Would that be okay if we just take a moment and listen to Dr. Dobson's statement about you and what you meant to he and Shirley?
It's okay if you provide the box of Kleenex. I think this is going to make me tear up.
Let's go to Dr. Dobson.
Well, hello, everyone. I'm James Dobson, and it is a deep honor for me to help you all celebrate Johnny's 50th anniversary in a wheelchair. I tell you that there is no one in the country that I respect more highly than this lady. We met many years ago, I think. It was at John MacArthur's church, as I recall. And shortly after that, Shirley and I attended your wedding ceremony when you married Ken. That was an incredible day, and I will never forget it. A year later, I invited you to be a guest on my Focus on the Family radio program. You had just written a song that I asked you to sing a cappella on that day. And Johnny, I don't remember the name of the song, but it had to do with your anticipation of being in heaven and running through the streets of that city. As I recall, it will be the first time that you've run since your accident when you were 17. I still have a recording of that interaction from 1983. Do you remember it, Johnny? What has impressed us about you is the way you've dealt with adversity and hardship for 5 decades. Even on that dark day, when I talked to you by phone, and then Ken was on the phone too, and we learned that you had contracted breast cancer and knew that chemotherapy came next. Even then, you refused to be shaken from the limb. Johnny and Ken, you looked to the Lord for strength on that day and held fast to one another. But the story did not end there. Millions of disabled people have you to thank for the Americans with Disability Act, which you almost single-handedly shepherded through Congress. You literally changed the face of the nation and made it more accessible for Americans who struggled to deal with their challenges and hardships. You did that, Johnny. Shirley and I love you more than you know, and we admire you. But I have one request now. I want to be there when when you run for the first time on Golden Streets. In fact, Shirley and I are planning a little reunion on that glad good morning inside the Eastern Gate. The honored guest will be wearing a seamless robe, and we will bow at his feet. And I'm asking you to sing for us on that day. Blessings to you, Ken, for your love and care for Johnny. And God be with you both.
Wow.
I don't even know what to say, really. How moving. And Johnny, you remember a lot of what he was talking about?
Oh, my goodness, yes. I remember that interview very well. I think it was in 1982 or 3. And the song he wanted me to sing was, and I won't do the whole thing here, but the words are so poignant. Though I spend my mortal lifetime in this chair, I refuse to waste it living in despair. And though others may receive gifts of healing, I believe that he has given me a gift beyond compare. Mm-hmm. And then it went, for heaven is nearer to me, and at times it is all I can see. Sweet music I hear coming down to my ear, and I know that it's playing for me. And then I go on to talk about how Christ, my Savior, will be there, and I'm his bride, and he will say, shall we dance? And our endless romance will be worth all the tears I have cried. And boy, that's the truth. It was true, what, 35 years ago when Dr. Dobson interviewed me, and it's as true now. I can't wait to hit those streets of gold and do those dances with not just the Lord Jesus, but with my husband, and maybe even a jig with Dr. Dobson. I don't know if I can get him out on the dance floor.
As you were singing, it reminded me of when I was a boy. On Sunday mornings, my mother used to play the piano, getting ready for church. She was the pianist, and she would sing old hymns and more. Johnny, as we jump into the topic, I want to take you to Altoona, Pennsylvania, and a scene in my life that relates to this. My mother had just suffered a massive heart attack. And I was in Lynchburg, Virginia at the time and got the phone call, and they said, this is serious. She suffered a widowmaker heart attack, and you better get up there to see her. And I told Dad, I said, I'll be there. And so I took off, and after Julie and I had taken care of the kids, and I drove up to Pennsylvania and reflected a lot on her life and how much she meant to me. Brought her some flowers. Never forget. I got there in time, and we were talking, and we were alone, and I gave her the flowers, and she said, "Tim, you've always been like that."
Oh, geez.
And I said, "Mom, I just wanted to get here. I'm one of 8 children, but I had an alone time with her. And it was one of those special moments in life you'll never forget." She was talking to me, mother to son, and just pouring out her heart. What I didn't know, Johnny, was that was going to be my last conversation
wow.
with her. As I left the room, critical care, as I'm walking out, I hear her say to me, "I love you, son." Mm. And I turned and looked back at her, and I said, "I love you too, Mom. I'll be right back." Well, I got in the car and started driving and got a phone call that she had coded blue right after that.
Oh, my goodness.
And stroked and wiped out her brain activity and everything. Mm. And so now to the scene. We're down in this room, and my dad is there, and our family's gathered around her bed. And my dad looked at all of us, pastored for nearly 60 years in rural Pennsylvania. My dad looked at all of us, and he said, "We need to let her go."
Yeah.
Mm. And I looked across the room at him, and it was like inside everything was screaming and saying, "How can you say that?"
Mm.
And he looked at us and said, "We need to let her go."
Yeah.
And I realized that he had spent his entire life with her since he was a boy coming back from World War II. And he loved her. Man, he loved her so much. But there was a time. Something was going on. It was time.
Right.
As we jump into this subject, Johnny, there are a lot of people out there who are in moments like this, complicated, difficult, precarious situations. And I know that's why you wrote this book. There's so many things that we need to understand. There are a lot of people taking us in directions, and the ethics of this are so complicated. Mm. But can you start us down this journey, Johnny, why you took on this subject of when is it time to die?
Well, there is a time to die, a time to live. And back in the early 90s, I was very active in a coalition against a proposition in our state of California to put legalized doctor-assisted death on the ballot. And we campaigned hard against it because I had way too many friends with disabilities who were despairing of their lives. And I knew that with a loose definition of terminal illness, that all it would take would be any one of these despairing friends to go before a court, make a challenge to the definition of what a terminal illness is, and before you know it, the door would be open to people with disabilities to have their lives ended by a lethal prescription. And so that's how I got involved. But Tim, the scenario you just described is so touching to the heart, because I'm sure every listener, there's not a cul-de-sac in America where people haven't wrestled with the same subject. We all want to go to heaven. We all get excited about seeing Jesus. But it's getting there. That's the challenge. And we all say we would like to die naturally. Just let me go, like your dad said. But it's become more complicated now and more of an ethical issue, an ethical question, because of the rapidly advancing medical technologies and tubes and machines and treatments. And
there's this rising tolerance almost of the euthanasia movement and more out there, right?
Exactly. How a person dies should be a private matter between the family and their physicians. There are already good laws on the books that help people die with dignity. For instance, no one is going to force you to take chemotherapy. Nobody's going to force you to take kidney dialysis. And if a family has a power of attorney for a loved one who is mentally incapacitated, that's even legal for the family to refuse treatment on behalf of that loved one. And your dad probably made the best call, because it was a private family matter between your mother and your dad and you friends and your pastor and also your physician. No doubt a physician with whom you shared similar life value. But it's a different culture now. And it's a confusing time for many people. Just recently, 69% of Americans agreed that physicians should be allowed to assist terminally ill people in ending their life. And here's the kicker. 42% of evangelicals expressed the same level of agreement. Now, that tells me that Christians have a fundamental fear of not only dying, but of suffering and pain. We want to avoid it. We want to escape it. We want to medicate it. We want to drug it. We want to divorce it. We want to euthanize it, do everything but live with it. And we have taken this fundamental fear of suffering and pain, and we have hammered together a social policy that is now sweeping the country, as you said. Six states have now legalized doctor-assisted death, and there are many more that are contemplating it before their state assemblies right now. So Christians have to wake up and grasp a biblical worldview on suffering and how to deal with it. Rather than legalize assisted suicide, we need more resources for better pain management, more education for average families who are desperate to know what's the right thing to do in a world of confusing technology. People who are despairing of a diagnosis of a terminal illness perhaps don't want to really die. All they really want is to be pulled up out of social isolation. They want better pain management. They want to know they're not going to be a burden to their family. They want someone to ascribe positive meaning to their pain. They want to find virtue in their suffering. They don't know how to do that, but Christians have the message. And Tim, that's why I wrote this book, to help the Christian population get a handle on what the issues are, to untangle the complicated questions, and to give them the wisdom that they can apply to real-life family situations such as yours and such as thousands that are being repeated across this country every day.
Johnny, I think there are a lot of terms out there that maybe we could discuss that would be helpful here as we continue on this journey. I guess, first of all, there's a big difference between helping someone die and allowing someone to die who's already dying.
Right. There's a fine line between providing treatment that will support life, life that is necessary, life that is valuable. There's a fine line between treatment that supports life as opposed to treatment that does nothing more than prolong the process of dying.
Yeah, because as a doctor, you take an oath. You take an oath to honor that life. You fight for that life.
Right. And a person might be in a terminal illness, let's say cancer, stage 4 cancer, in terrible pain. Now, one might administer massive doses of morphine, which will mitigate that pain, help that pain.
Pain management.
Now, it may hasten that person's death, but that is not assisting him in a suicide, because the motive is to help him with his pain, make him as comfortable as possible as his body goes through this process of dying.
Right.
So motive and intention is so key and critical when we talk about the decision one needs to make at end of life.
You know, it's interesting. We were chatting just before we got started with the interview a little bit about how there's some debate around the term terminal illness now.
Yes.
Can you explain that?
Well, I was just reading a report that came out from the organization, quote, Compassion for Dying. It's a Right to Life group in Oregon, which was key and instrumental in passing the physician-assisted suicide law there in Oregon some years ago. And the question was posed to this group, what is the definition of terminal illness? Mm. And the point of discussion put before this group was, if a person has a terminal illness and chooses not to treat it, does that qualify him for physician-assisted suicide under the terms of the Oregon law?
Wow.
And the response was, well, if a person has, let's say, muscular dystrophy and refuses to treat it, yes, that would be considered a terminal illness. Or if a person has multiple sclerosis, Lou Gehrig's disease, these now are being considered, disabilities are now being considered as possible terminal illnesses if the despairing person, the depressed person, chooses not to treat its illness. But if a person has MD or MS or ALS, the question may not be for them, I want to die. The question may be, I'm depressed. Help me. I don't want to
die. Absolutely.
Right. I mean, when I was first
injured. There's such a fine line here.
Exactly. When I was first injured 50 years ago, I begged my friends to bring in their mother's sleeping pills. I wanted my girlfriend from high school to slash my wrists. I could not bear the thought of living for the, you're kidding me? Living for the rest of my life without use of my hands or legs? I'm not going to do that. I can't do that. I mean, the thought made me literally physically ill. I vomited at the idea. And my problem wasn't my quadriplegia. My problem was my clinical depression, and that can be treated. Quadriplegia might not be able to be treated, but my clinical depression could be treated, and it was treated. And I came up out of that, now what, so many more years later, so grateful that there were no right-to-die advocates, Jack Kevorkians, doctor-assisted death movements. I'm so grateful that the trend then was not, you're better off dead than disabled. I'm here today to thank God for that.
And it's scary when you really think about the slippery slope that this can take us on.
Well, we're already on that slippery slope. And proof of that is this recent dialogue that is now being carried out in Oregon as to the definition of a terminal illness. It is now including people with qualified disabilities.
You're listening to Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. I'm Dr. Tim Clinton, sitting behind the mic today for Dr. Dobson. Our special in-studio guest, one of my favorites, Johnny Erickson Tata. Johnny, this is a, like we said, a difficult, challenging subject, but it's in every home. We're all living in these places, or we will be. You hear what I'm saying? And these kind of questions have got to be asked and answered. There are a couple more terms I wanted to throw up because these all feed into this, and that is quality of life has now become a real important thing to understand, and the debate on right to die. Who and when and how does that decision get made? You know, Ecclesiastes said there's a time to be born and there's a time to die. The only reason we're having this conversation is because this is where we're at.
That's right. And the Bible speaks to this whole idea of, quote, mercy killing euthanasia, call it what you wish. Even the prophet Elijah, you know, just cried out.
I want to die.
Take my life, God.
Yeah.
Take it.
There's no one around.
And then there's the example of King Saul. When he was in battle and fell on his sword and was dying, he begged his armor bearer to run him through. And the armor bearer did that. And when it was later reported to King David,
They killed him.
You know, life for a life. So the Bible speaks rather clearly about mercy killing. Even when we look at the Ten Commandments, thou shalt not kill, that obviously includes the idea of self-murder beside murdering someone else. So the Bible says time and again, choose life. If you are going to err at all, if there's any question,
choose life.
If you are standing by the hospital bedside of your loved one and you are confused, err on the side of life. That's always the best thing to do. Also, it's also good to get very close to the facts of the terminal illness or the disability or the end-of-life issues that are confronting you. And the best way to do that is to make certain that you are engaged with a physician who shares your life values. You want to make certain that the physician who's calling the shots is someone who has a strong sense of the sanctity of life, that life is worth preserving, that life is worth living, and to err on the side of life.
Johnny, as we go here, we'd be remiss if we couldn't tell our listeners how, again, to contact you, learn more about Johnny and Friends, and all the work and the resources that you have.
Yes, exactly, Tim. We do have resources, especially if you, like me, are struggling with chronic pain or living in a wheelchair or facing some pretty tough medical decisions. We've got resources. We want to help. We want to be there for you. We want to pray for you. And you can open up your heart to us and ask what you will, and we'll provide the assistance at johnnyandfriends.org. That's JohnnyandFriends, johnnyandfriends.org.
Every day we come to you on this station at this time because we care all about you and your relationships with the Lord, your relationships with those you hold dearest, and we want to discuss life issues in such a way that you know God is in the midst of it all. And to all of our listeners out there, I'm Dr. Tim Clinton. On behalf of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk, thanks for listening.
Well, that was Dr. Tim Clinton and Johnny Erickson Tata talking about a topic that's becoming ever more relevant in this culture. You know, our mission here at Family Talk is to support the societal pillars of marriage and the family and parenthood. And we do that by bringing you interviews and topics like the one you heard today, informing you of other issues that face us in our Christian journey. Thank you for listening today for this wonderful conversation that Dr. Tim Clinton had with my good friend, Johnny Erickson Tada. And make sure to come back tomorrow to hear the second half of that discussion that focused on Johnny's book, When Is It Right to Die? That's next time here on Family Talk, and God's blessings to you all.
Family Talk is not associated with Focus on the Family.